John and Jane Q. Citizen mostly ignore these trends and details and know nothing of geologist Hubbard's bell-shaped charts of peak oil. Senior oil executives sometimes discuss them in industry conferences, but elected officials, many with decades of energy platitudes under their belts, typically shrink from opening what would be a Pandora's box of political consequences. Oil was there for our grandfathers, they insist, and it will be there for our grandchildren. It is part of the American way. The politics of oil dependence in the United States, in sum, is ingrained and possessive. A culture of red, white, and blue assumptions of entitlement. A foreign policy steeped in covert petroleum emphasis, and a machismo philosophy of invade and take it. But before pursuing these cultural aspects, we must examine the political infrastructure. Oil's growing influence on party politics and the presidency, together with the uniquely powerful role it has played in U.S. foreign policy over the years. The emergence of oil and U.S. party politics. Almost from its birth, the industry put conspicuous political muscle on display in its home region, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. Oliver Hazard Payne, a wealthy Cleveland refiner and early ally of John D. Rockefeller, rose during the 1870s to become treasurer of Standard Oil, supervising the Ohio-based company's financial liaisons with federal and state politicians. This was an era infamous for the easy equation of money and power. In 1884, Payne is said to have handed out enough to convince the Democratic Ohio legislature to send his father, Congressman Harry Payne, rather than some other party stalwart, to the U.S. Senate. 4 years earlier, Standard had helped elect to the U.S. Senate a friendly West Virginia oil man, Johnson N. Camden, whose company, renamed Consolidated Oil, had already been secretly bought out by Rockefeller. Camden, too, was a Democrat. Like most other magnates, Rockefeller sought friends in both parties. As for Republican Pennsylvania, reformer Henry Demarest Lloyd sardonically and famously observed that Standard had managed to do everything with the state legislature but refine it. Access and power flourished, although by the 1890s the Rockefeller fortune, relentlessly attacked by muckraking journalists, had become the nation's most controversial. In party terms, the Pennsylvania and Ohio oil lands sat in Republican regions, but beginning in 1901, geology favored existing or soon-to-be-admitted Democratic states with the gushers at Spindletop and major finds in Oklahoma and Louisiana. By the time Franklin D. Roosevelt ran for the White House in 1932, even grander fields had opened up in eastern Texas, ensuring that state's future as America's top oil and gas producer. This geography may have influenced Roosevelt to select crusty Speaker of the House John Nance Garner of Texas as his running mate. Ironically, the New Deal coalition came undone 36 years later under the first Texas-bred president, Lyndon Johnson. For the liberalizing National Democratic Party, Johnson's oil ties turned out to be a lagging, not leading, indicator. Oil's bipartisan geography ensured the industry power regardless of party control in Washington. The East Texas discoveries of 1930 to 1931, followed by a 1932 to 1933 glut and price collapse, led to petroleum becoming a major preoccupation come beneficiary of the New Deal. In 1926, Washington Republicans had jumped the oil depletion allowance from a piddling 5% to a lucrative 27.5%, but they also dropped top federal income tax rates low enough to mute the rewards of the allowance. The Democratic Congresses of the 1930s, herded along by tough Texan trail bosses, kept the high allowance and liberalized it. Meanwhile, the maximum federal income tax rate rose to 91%. A cross-hatching of liability, shelter, and relief that revalidated oil's nickname of black gold. Many oilmen, especially Texans and Southerners, but even some in the Rockefeller apparatus, backed Roosevelt in his first race when oil needed help. Coal interests generally stuck with the GOP, which increased Democratic openness to oil. In addition to the depletion allowance, New Deal collaboration included price supports for oil and import restrictions. Roosevelt also signed so-called hot oil legislation. Pushed by the big companies, this 1935 statute prohibited interstate oil transfers, typically by small shippers, at prices below those set by state regulators. Between them, state and federal regulation created something of a maze. Eventually, oil imports from abroad would be managed through a two-tier system in which U.S. producers received considerably more than the per-barrel price set in global markets. Because a boom or bust commodity like oil required some regulation to minimize gluts and price collapses, a degree of government involvement was critical. Further, World War I had already illustrated oil's national security importance. Liberals and reformers howled at favoritism, usually castigating the federal tax breaks, so lucrative that they often put wealthy oil men on the defensive. Oklahoma Senator Robert Kerr, the multimillionaire head of Kerr McGee Oil and for a brief time in the 1950s a presidential hopeful, wryly pitched an audience of skeptical border state farmers by stating his respect for the right of any American to be against any racket he isn't in on.